InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
The U.S. has more than 4 million miles of rivers, supplying drinking water, power, food, and habitat, but a new study shows most of them may not be as protected as we think. Here to talk about this is Professor Julian Olden of the University of Washington. Professor, you and your colleagues conducted the first comprehensive review of river protection in the U.S. What motivated you to take on that challenge?
We're all well aware that freshwater ecosystems are really important for cultures and livelihoods. So we're seeking to try to protect these values and these functions moving forward. But what is really surprising that despite some bright spots in the way in which we're protecting them currently, we still really have a lack of a fundamental understanding of just about answering a really fundamental question, just how protected are American rivers. So this project and goal was really to think about how do we untangle this real bird nests of different regulatory frameworks and conservation policies and different practices and the way in which we try to protect our freshwater ecosystems.
Well, you kind of touched on my next question, but I'll ask it anyway here. The U.S. has millions of miles of rivers, yet your study found less than 20% are adequately protected. Why is that gap so large?
Yeah, less than 20%. And when you look at the lower 48, we found that just close to 12% of our rivers are protected. And I think in large part, this reflects the fact that historically, the way in which we think rivers are protected is just by their opportunistically flowing through terrestrial protected lands. So you can think of national forests or national parks or wilderness areas. But we haven't been deliberate in the way in which we try to protect fresh waters. Some really large federal efforts are things like the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, which we always think is emblematic of the way in which we protect these freshwater ecosystems. But this is just a small fraction, less of a half of 1% on the way in which we try to protect rivers across the United States. So, you know, we recognize these really large gaps, both in terms of the ways in which we protect them and then just geographically, you know, from east to west, just how differentially different states kind of undertake this challenge.
You point out that rivers cross borders and ownership boundaries. How does that complicate conservation efforts?
I think something that's unique about fresh waters is that all water originates from upstream, right? It really connects landscapes. And for that reason, when you have kind of small postage stamp-like protection efforts, sometimes, you know, bounded by terrestrial protected areas, ignores the fact that many of the threats to fresh waters originate upstream. You know, you can think of dams and water diversions that take water upstream and doesn't deliver them downstream, or land use practices, you know, thinking about converting forested landscapes to urban or agriculture. So it's that real continuity, it's that real kind of upstream to downstream kind of effects which really complicate the way in which we try to protect river systems.
Many people assume major laws already protect rivers, but your study revealed the Clean Water Act doesn't really provide that much protection, right?
Yeah, I mean, it does its part. You know, the Clean Water Act designates outstanding waterways across the United States to try to protect water quality and protect fish and wildlife. And there's a good number of that occurs across the nation as well as state level outstanding waters. Wild and scenic rivers are another example of that. But again, it's just a small fraction. But one bright spot is that many states are undertaking riparian-based focuses. So a riparian is kind of the forested or the land that surrounds a river. And if we protect that land that kind of borders rivers, we can often protect a lot of the functions. So there's a number of states which have kind of riparian-focused protections that might kind of manage forestry practices in a way in which we both can benefit from the landscape, but also protect freshwater ecosystems. So that's, I think, a bright spot is the state-level approaches to river protection and how it contributes to the larger picture.
We're talking about protection of rivers, which supply drinking water, power, food, and habitat, with our guest, Professor Julian Olden of the University of Washington. Your study found that most river protection comes indirectly from land-based regulations. Why isn't that enough on its own?
Definitely, it's a good start. I think, you know, by protecting land, you often protect the fresh waters that move through it. So I don't want to underestimate the value of terrestrial protected areas. So we can think of things like wilderness lands, you know, national forests, national parks. These types of things are all critically important for protecting fresh waters. But since many of the threats originate upstream and outside of these delineated protected areas, there's much more to be done. So it's not just the protection of the land, but it's also protection of the key ecological processes that occur in the channel And that's what our study points to, is that a more coordinated effort between both terrestrial and purely freshwater protected mechanisms are needed moving forward.
Your team created something called a River Protection Index. Can you explain what that is?
In the past, when people have thought about protection, it's a black and white delineation often. It's either something's protected or it's not. But we know that these variety of mechanisms, whether they're land or water-based protections, have different effectiveness in the way in which they protect fresh waters. And this is what our approach attempted to do. We attempted to recognize the fact that certain mechanisms might be better at protecting fresh waters versus others. And we wanted to develop an overall index which weighted all of those different contributions in a way in which we could have a standardized way of comparing, you know, just how well our protection measures say, you know, in the southeastern part of the United States versus the western part of the United States. So it provides a measure not only of putting our finger on the pulse of how well we're doing for protection currently, but it helps us establish benchmarks and goals moving forward.
Protection seems to vary widely by region. Why would you say high elevation and remote rivers are better protected than low elevation headwaters?
Some of that comes down to the fact that because of the terrestrial protections being so important, we often protect high elevation, scenically beautiful areas on the landscape. And we seek to protect those for recreational purposes, for example. But what happens is that it's a little bit disproportionate in terms of the types of rivers that are being protected. Those headwater streams have higher protections, but as you move down through the landscape, through more agricultural or urban developed areas, that protections slowly diminish.
Now, your study highlights underprotection across much of the Midwest and South. How do you explain those regional gaps?
We found some really interesting geographic patterns. Perhaps unsurprisingly, much of the Western United States had relatively higher levels of protection. That's in large part because, you know, these areas are dominated by public federal lands, which offer some level of protection to rivers. But, you know, as you integrate and move into the central parts of the United States, public federal lands proportionally are much lower, which means we just have less protection. One really interesting aspect of our project here was that it's a real patchwork of protections, which means it's not just simply an east versus west or an urbanization gradient pattern that we're seeing here. We're seeing that there's high level of protections in those areas or states which are showing strong initiatives. For example, the state of New Jersey, which has a state level riparian buffer protection, really heavily helps those rivers there, as opposed to more kind of federal public lands in the West, which are protecting many rivers.
Can you explain, I guess in simple terms, how protecting upstream watersheds benefits household drinking water?
We see some really great examples of, you know, opportunities to protect entire watersheds, which provide clean drinking water and minimizes the need to have highly costly wastewater treatment plants. So in the Catskills, for example, are highly protected and provide very clean drinking water to the city of New York. So time and time again, there are examples of if you protect your watersheds, not only are you protecting the values of those streams, the fish, the wildlife, but you're protecting a lot of the processes, the water purification that then benefits downstream human communities. So it's often cleaner and less costly water to urban centers.
Professor, if policymakers could take one practical step right now based on your findings, what would make the biggest difference for America's rivers?
It's a great question. There's many different policy actions that I think can lead to improved protections of fresh water. One major one is to make sure that we safeguard current protections. So our results show that public lands are very important for protecting freshwater ecosystems, but, you know, the durability of these protections moving forward are not necessarily certain. So protecting current mechanisms of protection, particularly around public federal lands, is really important. But then there's a lot of effort and need to have kind of more collaborative efforts between states. Many, many states share watersheds, and therefore they share the responsibilities of having practices that protect rivers flowing in and out of their state boundaries. So we think there's a lot of important roles to be played at a state level to try to promote protection efforts that span different state boundaries.
Your study focused on the United States and rivers in the U.S., but we sometimes see photos of foreign countries, for example, in Asia, perhaps, where rivers are extremely polluted and they're just, you know, weird colors with chemicals. Do you have any thoughts on that? And do those affect us directly?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of lessons to be learned here. We might lament the fact that we have a very low level of river protection here in the U.S., but in many ways, we might be doing better than other places in the world. There's challenges elsewhere with respect to large dams, large conversion of land to urban or agricultural use, for example. Deforestation is rampant and is a very large issue when we think about the enduring and deepening crisis facing fresh waters. So there's lots of reasons to ensure that our protection does not force our rivers that way. But in reality, we have many rivers that are very similar to other parts of the world and face similar challenges. We have many highly polluted river systems across the United States, which is not safe to swim in. The water surely is not supportive of fish and wildlife. So here in the United States, I'd say we really need to roll up our sleeves to think a little bit about having measures that protect fresh waters for future generations and really reflects the values that we hold in these systems for society and for nature.
Professor Julian Olden of the University of Washington, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure.
Next, the core components that lead to happiness when InfoTrack continues.
Don't go away. InfoTrack will be back right after this.